Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. So thank you for being here. Let's get on into it. Today, I'm very excited, because I haven't done this in a while. I have a tremendous story for you. I'm going to be talking about a topic that is very dear to my heart, and I haven't quite done it this way in far too long. So what prompted this decision to organize the show this way today was listening to a lot of my older episodes. And I've been doing this for almost 5 years now. And so it's a significant chunk of my life. And I have changed a lot mentally and physically and ideologically. When I started the show, I was 24, 25, somewhere in there. I was a young dad and I had very little financial difficulties. I was living in a house with my best friends, and it was honestly probably the best time of my life, and I don't think I'll ever get that back again. But something I did differently is that I would really buckle down and research topics and ideas. And I've always been good at research. I've always been good at studying. And I would write out scripts and have this whole significant, you know, organization to it. And so I did that. And honestly, over the last couple of years, I've just gotten really lazy. And that's a disservice to you in the end. And I would just come up to the mic and talk about whatever's on top of my head. And honestly, some of it turned out good, but I do feel that structure and real time with these ideas makes me better at giving you the ideas. And so that's where I'm kind of trying to get back to. And I also want to have more interviews. I desperately, desperately want to have more guests on the show, and I'm working on it, and we're going to get there. But anywho's, that's most of my housekeeping. Today's been kind of a crazy day. I've had a lot of difficulties. I'm sorry, I always bitch and moan so much at the beginning of these shows. I've also noticed that. I always have physical trauma or disorder in my body or some sort of whatever that I'm complaining about. And that seems to be this major thrust of my life, unfortunately. So I've had this problem with my eyes over the last couple weeks, and I don't really quite know what's going on. I went to urgent care, and they looked at me, and I was like, oh, you're all fucked up, and they were pretty concerned, because eye problems can be pretty hardcore. The back of your eye cavity is like a millimeter or two away from your brain, and it's super easy for foreign bodies of malicious character to get into your brain. And so I was put on a pretty aggressive treatment of antibiotic ointment, which was disgusting, putting goop in your eyes. And I'd do it like 4 times a day. It was fucking god awful. And after about a week of that, things seemed to be improving. And then a couple days after that, I went to my primary care to kind of have things checked out. In and out in 30 seconds, says I'm fine. 2 days later, I start having issues again. And I can't afford to go to urgent care. I'm not convinced it's an infection at this point. It's really uncomfortable. It's most destructive to my peace when I'm trying to focus and read. And I'm incredibly light sensitive. That's something else I've noticed. I'm always just looking through a fog now. And I'm waiting for my primary care to finally give me an open appointment so I can go fucking get this looked at. But I've just been really tense, clenched. And so I'm really happy to be here because now we get to chill out and relax and talk about cool shit. So today I want to talk about cats. And obviously I'm pretty obsessed with cats. I got Muskie right here. He's sitting on his cat tree. He's being all cool. He's listening and we're kicking it. But, you know, I've had a weird history with cats. So I've always had cats. My grandparents have like a fucking huge assortment of wild strays that'll come in and out. And they basically just have like these like cat troughs that they put kibble in. I remember all those, and they had like mean, nasty, fucking wild tomcats. There was one they had that was called Monster. And I remember having kittens and all the other cats when I was growing up, and I remember always kind of feeling like almost like watched and judged by felines, and I always felt it was difficult for me to make a connection with the cats. And like, in a spirit of honesty, I was almost borderline abusive to a lot of my cats, like not like hitting and not like fucking maiming, but like control and the use of like, I'd make these like weird mazes and like out of like cardboard boxes, and just make them do weird shit because I liked being in control. And as a child, it's like one of the first times that you have this little being that you are bigger than and you are allowed to control them. It's almost like this first opportunity to practice control. And in a lot of ways, I fucked that shit up. And my most, like, the primary cat when I was growing up was my cat Reefer. I named her Reefer. And then my sisters named her Princess Diamonds. And so then me and my father would have this back and forth because I'd always call it Reefer. And then like all my friends would call it Reefer. And she was awesome. I love that cat. She's a little tiny. She's mean. Mostly because I was a fucking asshole. And so she had to figure that out. Like, I would cut the bottoms off of 2-liter bottles and stick it on the cat's head and then blow smoke into the bottle so that the cat would run around like a little astronaut helmet. That's fucked up. I know it's fucked up. I've told her sorry a lot. But since her wild kittenhood, she's grown up and she's become a very old cat. I think there's only a couple more years left in her, but I love her dearly. And when I left my parents' home, when I was 19 when first time I ever moved out, and I had her with me. And she was in the apartment with me and my buddies. And then when my son was born, I moved up to Northern Colorado. I brought Reefer with me. I remember she would be so fucking mean and she'd be terrified of the fucking being in the car. And so the only thing I knew how to do, because I didn't have a cat crate, I just shove her in a fucking pillow sack, tie the top off because she could breathe through it, and she'd just be pissed off and yell the whole fucking time. Fucked up, I know. I know. I'm better now. I promise. You know, Muskie is very well taken care of. I love that little thing. And Shifu is, you know, crazy, but I take care of her really well too. We all get through our weird shit. But as a grown man now, you know, now I'm 30 years old. I have my 10-year-old boy. And now I got two of my own cats. I never had two cats before at the same time. My grandparents had a shit ton, but my dad never had more than one. And so now I'm looking at this history and how important it has been to me and how little I actually know about their history. And so I sat down and I watched a shit ton of YouTube videos, and I have this like massive, like, you know, I've got those big books that you put on coffee tables that nobody ever actually opens. Yeah, I got one of those that's called Cat Breeds. And so I got a lot of this information from that. I listened to this one guy who's pretty obsessed with cats. His name's Jackson Galaxy, but he had some cool videos, you know. But anyways, let's get on into it. So part one, we're going to discuss the history. So this is more like what I was conceiving in my head is more like how human beings have learned how to cohabitate, because we never really domesticated cats, not fully. Like, the domestication of dogs changed them physiologically. A dog is very, very different looking than a wolf. And the process of interbreeding and selective breeding, and which we've done to cats too, but like, that process with dogs is so much more advanced, and it's changed them so much. And so that's not the same exact thing with cats. Like, cats still have a lot of their interior solidarity. You know, they're these solitary hunters. And in some ways, cats are probably some of the most proficient hunters on this planet, especially when it comes to the amount of different types of prey items that a cat can kill. It's pretty insane. So we're looking at when the genus for cats, which is going to be Felis, the genus Felis was born approximately 6.2 million years ago, which is a fucking long time ago. And then they, the scientists that be, think that about 130,000 years ago, wild cats start spreading over from the African plains all throughout Eurasia. So collectively, these wild cats are called Felis sylvestris. And the domestic cat that we now have is differentiated by Felis catus. Pretty good. So these wild cats that sort of find these different areas that they sort of coexist in, and we'll talk about that more in another section, but you can kind of consider these regional groupings of wild cats land races, which I love that word because the same thing is with cannabis. So marijuana has a rich cultural history, and if you know or in the know, you have cannabis sativa, cannabis indica, cannabis ruderalis. So cannabis sativa is a land race. Well, it's more like a species, but I'm not explaining this very well. So sativa is not a land race, but within sativa, the cannabis that naturally grows in a certain area of Africa is a land race. It's grown there naturally for a long fucking time without human intervention. And then the cannabis that's growing in the Himalaya Mountains, the Kush Mountains, this Kush is also a land race. So it's kind of how the cats have gotten. So you have all these wild cats that start to spread. And as they find new areas, they start to adapt to their environment. And then they stay there for a really long time. And they become these distinct individuals that may look very different, but they're all wild cats. And so that's kind of what a land race is. So this is where it kind of gets pretty cool. So 12,000 years ago is when they think that human agriculture is starting to come into dominance, right? So we can call this the agricultural revolution. And what this means is that people are starting to move from being hunter-gatherers, where they're always on the move, living in these little tribal societies, and now they're starting to stay in one place, starting to grow food, which means that you could have a surplus, which means you have to store it, and it means you have a bunch of food sitting around, maybe rotting, because we don't have refrigerators yet. So this draws in, who do you think? Rodents, which are pretty gross and disgusting. They're pestilent, if you will. So now we have rodents coming in to eat all the human scraps. And then lo and behold, wild cats start to come into human settlements to hunt these rodents, which is fantastic. Because all of a sudden, all the people are like, oh my God, I can't fucking arrow all these fucking mice everywhere. Now a wild animal comes in and just eats them for me? Fuck yeah. I mean, it's pretty cool that all of a sudden we have this cohabitation that comes from mutual success from these two animals, really, humans and cats. So now this continues, and some of the biggest cultures that we think about is going to be like the Egyptians, would have a very feline-interested culture. They have all these hieroglyphics and pictures that demonstrate cats. And then, of course, in the Fertile Crescent, you know, near Iran, Iraq, and in sort of that Middle East area, the birthplace of civilization, of language, you know, all that. There's an intense culture of cat-rearing there, too. And whenever people would move to a new place, they would bring their cats with them. And so over the next couple thousand years, cats just end up almost everywhere that people go. But at this point, nobody's really selectively breeding them. You know, the regional land races that people are sort of going into contact and partnership with are still sustaining more of their own sort of thing. They still have their independence, if you like. In the 1500s, you have the Middle Ages, which is a downslip of education, of higher thinking. It's this obsession with religiosity. This is before the Reformation into Protestant thought. This is before we have a diversification of Christianity. The Catholic Church has complete control of people's spiritual identity. And it's kind of weird because the mythology here is kind of interesting. So in Egypt, you have a lot of different cat gods. But one of the biggest one is considered, the name is Bastet. And I almost wanted to name Shifu Bastet, but it's just such an awkward name. I was like, we can name her Boss. That would have been dope, actually, if she was named Boss. But anyways, so at first, Bastet was depicted as a lioness. So Panthera, it's this species name for the bigger cats, which is very different from these wildcat genuses. So the lioness, over time, is mutated into a domestic cat sort of depiction of what Bast Het is. Then the Romans come in and they start to take all the people's mythology, because the Romans were really smart. So they would come in and they would say, you know, I'm taking over your shit. This is now Rome. You can keep all of your stuff, all your myths, all your religions. We're not going to change that. You keep your status quo as long as, you know, you give me a little bit of your dough and fight for me if you need to, right? So the Romans take this idea of Bast Het, and it's morphed and bred and, you know, like mixed together with the mythology of Isis, which Isis is the goddess of magic. Now, this magical background is being put into this Egyptian mythology, and then you have all the occultism and all these weird mystery schools and all this crazy stuff in prehistory. And so all this comes into cats being kind of seen as these magical entities. And to wrap it back into this Middle Age system being run by the Catholic Church, the Catholic Church's biggest enemy, at least to tell people, is Satan. And so this is where you get this mixture of Satanism and cats, particularly black cats, which that's why I asked for a black cat. That's why Muskie is a beautiful black cat. I wanted one. But they carry this baggage of like horrid Satanism, like in like the original Satanic Panic back in the 1500s, right around the plague. I know I talked about this in another episode, but one of the dominant ideas on how the plague got started and rose into this broiling, fearsome hellhole of just death, is they think because the Catholic Church basically went out and had a catticide. They told everybody to kill all their cats because cats were being linked to witchcraft. And, you know, women who would have these herb shops where they would heal people with natural knowledge would often have cats around. And so, Crazy Cat Lady 101. And so they killed a shit ton of cats. And then pretty soon, right after all the cats are killed, rodent populations bloom and just get massive. And then the rodents bring the fleas, and the fleas bring the plague virus. And then millions of fucking people died. Pretty sad. Another myth that I found kind of interesting is the myth of Sith. Sith was a black cat in Irish mythology. He had a white spot on his chest, and he could transform 9 times, which was then kind of coalesced into the new modern day mythology of cats having 9 lives. That's where all that comes from. So the Middle Ages, kind of dark, kind of dreary, but still kind of interesting. After that, in the 1600s, you have cats being brought to the Americas, and there's this breed, kind of, I guess, which is probably recreated later in history. But some of these cats that were brought on the ships to the new land with the pilgrims probably turned into what we consider now a Maine Coon cat. And if you look those up, they look beautiful. There are these semi-long-haired cats. We're going to go more into some of the breeds and that we think of nowadays. But yeah, it's pretty cool. So after that, you get to the 1800s, and this is where shit gets wild. So there's this lady, you might have heard of her. Her name was Queen Victoria. Queen Victoria is obsessed with cats, like to the point that she started this revolution in cats that we're now going to call cat fancy. This mass importation of all these selective different types of regional cats from all over are being brought into England and being brought into the Western world. And all these cats are then subjected to intense breeding programs, just like dogs, in order to get all the different types of variations. And just there's a shit ton of them. Here, I'm going to go to my book, and I'm just going to read you some of these names of all the different breeds. So this is from my big coffee table book. It's called The Ultimate Encyclopedia of Cats, Cat Breeds and Cat Care, by Alan Edwards, veterinary consultant, Trevor Turner, bee, vet, med, whatever. So halfway through the book, is where they have this like table of contents for all the different breeds, and it's a beautiful book. All these full color pages, it's enjoyable. You know, and this was my introduction into seeing all the different types, And so here we go. Before I do that, I want to describe to you what a pedigree means. So a pedigree is like cat genealogy. It's a record of the ancestry of the cat. And so a pedigree is very, very pure, like a purebred dog or whatever. And so if you have a purebred, say, Angoran, that purebred Angoran, if you have two of those having babies, all the kittens are going to look exactly like mom because the genes are that fucking in there. And sometimes they'll push that to the extreme where you have to have multiple generations to prove that even in three or four generations of litter that you're not going to have any other weird cat colors that are going to be in there. Whereas Reefer, my cat from my childhood, she would habitually jump off of the third floor and just go fuck like mad because we didn't get her spayed until she was like 10. And so she would just go crazy when she was in heat. And on one of her little forays into the neighborhood, she got herself pregnant. And her kittens, well, not only can cats also be incepted by multiple males, but her kittens were like one black kitten, one pure white kitten, one Siamese kitten, and then one kitten that looked just like her, you know, because her genetics are so mixed. Whereas a pedigree is going to be pure. So this is a list of the pedigrees. The long hair group, Persians, semi-long hair group, Burman, and I'm going to go through these fast. Turkish Van, Turkish Angora, Somali, Maine Coon Cat, Norwegian Forest Cat, Balinese, Angora, Ragdoll, Tiffany, Kimmerick, Exotic Short Hair, British Short Hair, American Short Hair, European Short Hair, Tartu, Oriental Short Hair, Siamese, Snowshoe, Seychelles, Abyssinian, Russian Blue, Korat. All right, you get it. There's a shit ton of them, is my point. And all of this is getting its rise and is really being focused on and probably came from this obsession with the Victorians, with cats, and just all their really cool breeding programs. It's really interesting to read about. And then lastly, on this timeline of history, in the 1900s, you can thank this guy named Ed Lowe. He made kitty litter. In the 1900s is when you see this, and particularly with the Victorians too, so the 1800s and 1900s, you see people bringing cats indoors. You see cats becoming members of the family. You know, like the cow and the sheep that is a working animal isn't considered like your family member. But like Muskie is like my son. Like I love him dearly. He sleeps in my bed. And so in order for you to bring your cats inside, even though cats are really good at burying their refuse, so to say, like they're very clean animals. You still have to have some sort of thing that you can do. And so without kitty litter, it changed the fucking game. It's a $1 billion industry. I mean, fucking Christ. There's so many different types of litter. You know, and I'm using like this weird wooden pellet shit that I had no idea. I don't think it even existed when I was a kid. But I don't know. I just found that very interesting. All right. Next section. I want to look at more of the background of wildcats, because I found this really interesting. And something that I suggest you do is to Google this stuff. In the future, I would love to have some sort of video. I'm working on finding a partner to help me start to make more video content, because I see the value of that and I understand. But if you would like to look up some of these creatures and just as I say these things, just kind of look at them. they're cool. Some of these, like I had no idea that there were so many like wildcats. Like we know about tigers and cheetahs, oh my, but wildcats are very diverse and they are all over the place. Like there's wildcats in South America too. And of course these are genetically removed from what we consider our house cat, because all domesticated cats, all house cats, come from one subspecies of wildcat, which is the African wildcat, which is Felis silvestris libica. Libica? Libica? Felis silvestris libica. I'm going to go with that. I didn't look up any fucking how to pronounce things today. So the African wildcat is also considered the Near Eastern wildcat. And this thing basically diversified and is what we now consider a new genetic animal, Felis catus, which is our house cat. So the European wildcat is called Felis sylvestris sylvestris. Holy racism, Batman. That tells me whoever was naming these things was definitely a white dude. And they were like, well, obviously wildcats had to start in Europe. And then they moved everywhere else. But that's most likely not true. Felis sylvestris ornata is the Indian or steppe or Asian wildcat. And then there's Felis sylvestris bieti, which is the Chinese wildcat. That thing looks awesome. If you only look at one animal, well, there's a lot of them. Look at all of them if you can, but the Bieti, the Chinese wildcat, is fucking, he's like super long hair, and it looks like an old Chinese dude who'd kick the shit out of you. And then there's other, you know, smallish wildcats that aren't considered wildcats, but are just different wildcats, really, you know? So all these other wildcats I just talked about are all subspecies of the same genus. These next ones are in a different family altogether. So Felis margarita, holy shit! One of the cutest fucking things I've ever seen in my life. If you can only look at two animals today, look at Bieti and look at Felis margarita. It's called the sand cat, and it's just so gorgeous. Like, these things look like they're permakittens. Like, literally, they're just kittens that never grew up. So after that, you have Felis chow, which is the jungle cat. Very cute. After that, Felis negripes, which is the black-footed cat. Another very just fucking cute animal. And then this last one is just ridiculous. It's kind of hard to find, but it's Felis octoboobs mundi. Boob. But they call it the palace cat. And the palace, P-A-L-L-A-S, cat is fucking weird looking. It's kind of like the Bieti. It has like really long hair and has like a Fu Manchu fucking mustache. Just look it up. Yeah. So these wildcats, I just didn't know they existed. And so that's why I just had to talk about them a little bit. All right, here's another cool thing that I learned about cats. There's a lot of different names for cats. Every single culture is going to have its own name because they've lived with us in all these different areas for so long. Each of these places have their own attachment and their own relationships. So the name for cat in Japan is Neko. The name for cat in China is Meow. I think that's pretty funny. In Italy and Spain, it's gatto for the male and gatta for the female. In France, it's chat or chatte for the female. Male is the first. In Arabic, it's kit, which I think is kind of funny because kit, I think that's where we get kitty from. In Nigeria, kianwa, ologbo, wamba, pussy. Yeah, boy. So Nigeria has all these different languages, which is why they have like all these different names for it. Ancient Turkish, which is where you're going to have like some of these long-haired varieties that I think was where like the Maine Coon kind of came from, is kedi, kitty. And Persian, it's gorbe. So in the modern world, we have this huge assortment of different cats. But, of course, a lot of these things were either recreated because in history we didn't have any breeding. Nobody was really focusing on it until you had the crazy Victorians. But a lot of these do have sort of a history in some way. So one of the most interesting ones that just really screamed out to me that seemed to have a big impact on everything is the Turkish variety, which is called the Turkish Angoran. It's considered a semi-long hair. So all long-haired cats are Persians. But the Persians come from the Turkish Angora because the Turkish Angora has this long coat. They have these really weird pointed faces. The Turks were obsessed with white cats. So even though they weren't breeding, because of this focus on white cats, there's still a huge dominance of whiteness in their color when it comes to their genetic history. The long hair for the Angorans is probably because Turkey is high elevation and very mountainous and a pretty hardy terrain. So these animals would need some sort of long hair coat, just like the Bieti in China. Chinese has a lot of mountains and is very cold too in certain areas. So most likely they think that Turkish Angoran cats were dyed out at some point, like at least in their main purity. And so this the breed was recreated in the 1960s with some, I think, specimens directly from Turkey from different isolated areas and then intense inbreeding just to get that. So these Turkish Angrens were bred with the variety of semi-long-haired cats in Persia at the time. And over time, and this is all a long time ago, like hundreds of years ago, because Turkish Angrens have been around since probably more than 2,000 years ago. These Persians, but we don't have exact proof of that, but you can assume, right? And so the Turkish were mixed together with the Persian variety, and then that's where you get the true long-haired that you have now, which are the Persian cats. Persians, to me, are not the most attractive cats. They're the kind of cats that have, like, so there's two different types. The doll-faced has a normal, appropriate face, I guess. But then they have these weird ones that was a mutation that came out, like, within this century. And then they're called peak-faced. And they have, like, a really squished-up nose, and they look kind of like the dogs, the dumb-looking dogs with the squished-up face. And, of course, they have a litany of health problems because of this mutation. And so either way, a lot of people focused on these, especially during Victorian England. And the Victorians had a lot of breeding programs to make these Persians. Anyways, I just thought that was interesting. So the last type of cat, house cat that you have are the short-haired cats, which wild cats were most likely short-haired cats. And so this coat is more natural to most breeds of wildcat, unless you're in a mountainous region. So the one that I found the most compelling, because it has more history and at least something written about it, is the Siamese cats. And so Siamese also look pretty fucking ugly to me, but they have a history recorded back to the 1400s, which was from this writing that they had called the Tamra Miao. It was brought to Britain during the 1800s, the Siamese, and then they were put into this intense breeding program to continue on till nowadays. Their color point pattern, which is, you know, the black tips and sort of like the, and it kind of diffuses into that tan, sandy, whitish color, that's natural to the Siamese. It's most likely part of their regional speciation and has probably existed in their color for thousands of years, as well as the blue eyes. So this is not a product of the crazy Victorians, even though they were obsessed with it. Using the Siamese color point gene, it was put into a lot of different animals. And so now you can see Persians with color point color and Angorans with color point color or any other fucking cat with color point color, because you can just do anything you want in this crazy breeding world that these people kind of get themselves into. The Korat was another ancient Thai cat, and it's the good luck cat. So like whenever you see like the cat with the, what's kind of waving at you or whatever in the pictures, I don't know. So Japanese bobtail cats are the ones that have that mutation where they don't have a tail. And so they look kind of weird. But independently, that same exact weird tailless mutation also happened on this little island that's off of Britain. It's called the Island of Man. And the Manx, which is this English tailless cat, it's kind of weird. They just, obviously they have the ability, the possibility of losing their tails. I always thought people were cutting them off, but I feel better now. So my last part that I want to discuss is I just kind of want to bring us home and kind of tie this into a knot, all that numbers and history, and just give you a couple stories of analogies that I've thought about when it comes to how I feel when I'm interacting with my cats and how they make me feel and what they've taught me. Because I think that by looking at relationship, whether it's you relating to another or your cat relating to the world or two cats interacting, I love watching cats interact. It is so interesting to me. So the first one I want to discuss is that when I watch Shifu and Musk play with each other, they're always kind of this point where she'll start to get pissed off and she's aggravated and just done with his shit. And when a cat gets angry, it flicks its tail back and forth. And so the more pissed off she's getting, she's just flicking her tail, which is just like this piece of candy to Musk, and he can't ignore it because it's just like a toy. Like, what are you doing? And so the more pissed off she gets, the more she allows the action that is compelling Musk's attention. And I think that we as people do that to each other. I think that unconsciously we piss others off, even if we don't know what we're doing. And while we are doing that, we are further complicating the situation that we find ourselves in. So the second one is this idea of jealousy and envy. I don't know if all cats are like this, but Shifu and me had a very close personal attachment for over a year before I got Musk. And so she's had to have this big transition learning how to allow him in our house, you know, and they want everything that the other has, you know, the cat tree, the top of the cat tree, king of the mountain, like for real, litter boxes. I bought two litter boxes because I would hope that they would both have their own little spaces, and they just both shit in each other's litter box, and it's disgusting. Like, Shifu's had a lot of, I'm sorry, it's kind of gross, but like stomach problems, and I just wish she would just have her stomach problems in one box so I don't have to clean three boxes. And for a little bit, I was using paper pellets, and that is foul. That is so foul. And it's more than just like physical things. Like, it, like even though the food is a big one, you know, they each want the other's food so fucking bad. But like even the ability to sleep in bed with me, you know, like Musk has almost permanently put himself in my bed now. And that was Shifu's spot for a while. And I remember that first week when I first got him, like she would come up when I would lay down in bed and I'd hear her come up and shuffle into bed. And then I could see her notice him. And then she would just like shake her body and get all pissed off and then run in the closet. And I swear she doesn't even sleep in my bed anymore. Like she refuses to. And that was her spot for a while. It's kind of sad. But this made me think about how as people, we do that to each other too. We always want what the other has. There's always this grass is greener on the other side approach to every fucking thing. And it's bullshit. And I look at them and it reminds me of me. And then, thirdly, just the simple delight of having a kitten in the house is enlightening. Like, it's the same with babies to an extent, but I think there's a lot more stress and pressure with a baby, unless it's not your baby, which that could be cool too. But unless it's you're not supposed to have that baby, then you need to give it back. But having this little creature that's so curious and just so full of himself and so happy all the time. Sometimes somebody's just mad, which is me too. But it fills me with joy just to have this little creature here. And I'm just, I don't know what the exact analogy is, but I think we need to remember to embrace that novelty and that newness. I think that's part of why we have kids, is to remind us of that. And it's just such a beautiful thing. I can't always have a baby animal, but I think every once in a while, I think it's a super good idea. All right. Well, that's it. That's all I got as far as information. I do want to go grab a book and read you to a little bit of something to think about. But I hope you enjoyed that. I enjoyed putting that together. I enjoyed doing the research and learning. And I hope this works out. I hope it's enjoyable. But yeah, I'll be right back. I decided to go with Eric Fromm because I found him compelling. This has absolutely nothing to do with cats. But it's good shit. I really enjoy his book. It's called Escape from Freedom. And he's looking at how we as humans, throughout most of history, we didn't have as much freedom in that sense of the word. But before we had freedom, we had the sense of belonging to the world and to our community and to our lives and to our work. And now we have more freedom to do things, maybe, but we don't have as much of that sense of belonging. And so because of less belonging, instead of not feeling involved with the world, has bred this immense anxiety. And so as humans, we're always trying to escape from our freedom, which is why he has the title of the book. In this chapter, he's looking at the different mechanisms and the different way that human beings try to escape the sense of freedom, which causes this existential anxiety and dread. So this is his third chapter, The Mechanism of Escape, and it's called Automaton Conformity. Here we go. In the mechanisms we have been discussing, the individual overcomes the feeling of insignificance in comparison with the overwhelming power of the world outside of himself, either by renouncing his individual integrity or by destroying others so that the world ceases to be threatening. Other mechanisms of escape are the withdrawal from the world so completely that it loses its threat, and the inflation of oneself psychologically to such an extent that the world outside becomes small in comparison. Although these mechanisms of escape are important for individual psychology, they are only of minor relevance culturally. I shall not, therefore, discuss them further here, but instead will turn to another mechanism of escape, which is the greatest social significance. This particular mechanism is the solution that the majority of normal individuals find in modern society. To put it briefly, the individual ceases to be himself. He adopts entirely the kind of personality offered to him by cultural patterns, and he therefore becomes exactly as all others are and as they expect him to be. The discrepancy between I and the world disappears, and with it the conscious fear of aloneness and powerlessness. This mechanism can be compared with the protective coloring some animals assume. They look so similar to their surroundings that they are hardly distinguishable from them. The person who gives up his individual self and becomes an automaton, identical with millions of other automatons around him, need not feel alone and anxious anymore. But the price he pays, however, is high. It is the loss of his self. The assumption that the normal way of overcoming aloneness is to become an automaton contradicts one of the most widespread ideas concerning man in our culture. The majority of us are supposed to be individuals who are free to think, feel, and act as they please. To be sure, this is not only the general opinion on the subject of modern individualism, but is also each individual sincerely believes that he is a he, and that his thoughts, feelings, wishes are his. Yet although there are true individuals among us, this belief is an illusion in most cases, and a dangerous one for that matter, as it blocks the removal of those conditions which are responsible for his state of affairs. Yeah, I like him. He is compelling. Anyways, I appreciate you so much. Thank you for being here. I'm here for you. This is why we do this thing, is to try to inspire more interest and creativity and passion and humor and interest in our worlds. And I want to do it together. So thank you so much for showing up, and we'll see you next time. After Odin says bye.
Hello, it's Ask O and the Gingerbread Man.
Yeah. So, what do you have to tell people about cats?
So, cats are these like intelligent creatures.
In what way?
In what way? Well, there's many ways. They can be dumb, fat, smart. So, and they're predators.
They are predators. What else makes a cat smart?
I honestly don't know.
What do they do that makes you think they're smart?
Climb, talk to other cats.
They do do that, huh?
Yeah.
Do you ever see a cat do problem solving and like figuring out a puzzle?
Yeah. Yeah, I have.
They're pretty intelligent. Yeah. Anyways, thank you for being here, boo.
Yep.
Well, I love you. Have a great week. Bye.
Bye.